Please be seated. Well, this is the last time I'll be celebrating Christmas with you as your bishop. All good things come to an end. It occurred to me, especially I'm not going to be hearing this great choir sing Christmas, at least not for a while, sitting in a pew. So I've been thinking a lot about what I'm going to say tonight over the past few weeks. I'm not going to give you any famous last words. It's not time for that yet. That's a long ways off. Now I want to tell you about what I love about this story that we're celebrating tonight. I came to it, of course, through my parents' celebration of Christmas. For me and my four sisters, they kept adding them, you know. I was all alone, and then it was one, two, three, four. And my parents really knew how to celebrate Christmas. It was always a big tree, beautifully trimmed. There was midnight mass that we all went to. When we came home, we put the baby Jesus in the creche, like you can see over there. And then we had our presents we could open. And later, as we got older, after the presents, we participated in the Réveillon meal, well into the wee hours of the night. Later on, I became an organist, and I celebrated Christmas sitting on the bench of the organ, leading God's people in singing those songs, telling this story, songs collected over centuries by the church, and in God's own sense of humor. I found myself as a young priest celebrating the holy mysteries of Christmas in a little church called All Souls, in a little town that had, for me at least, the spine-tingling name of North Versailles. That's Versailles, if you weren't wondering. And yes, by the way, there is a Versailles, PA, of which North Versailles is to the north. And it's located on the Monongahela River, just outside of Pittsburgh. For me, those Christmases were very hard because I was celebrating them with people who'd all lost their jobs. This was in the midst of the industrial collapse in western Pennsylvania. And not only did they lose their work, but they were also losing their way of life, their hard, proud culture of mill towns. After that, we went to a church just outside of Philadelphia. Beautiful church, all Tiffany windows. There was no unemployment then, but there were lots of hardships anyway. Christmas is a tough time. It has the power to bring back all kinds of things that we realize are lost forever. And then my final parish was a large congregation with a school in a poor town in South Florida, a town called Fort Pierce. And then we told the story again, but to a huge mixture of people. We had fruit pickers, and we had citrus grove owners. We had cattle ranch owners and their cowboys, which in Florida are called crackers, by the way. It's not an insult, it's because they crack their whips, you see, in front of the cows, just so you know. Oh, we had all kinds of people. We had oceanographers, a big institute. We had retired Yankees, as they were affectionately known. Everybody had a bumper sticker on their pickup truck that said, "We don't give a damn how you used to do it up north." And we had all kinds of other people. We had prostitutes from the local ministry. All big, huge congregation, very, very mixed, celebrating the story. And for the past 17 years, I've been celebrating this story here with you, in this congregation, which every year is different. Some people have likened our ministry in Europe to being like preaching to a parade. How many nationalities are here tonight? I remember once we were counting 20. And the story goes on. A lot of things I remember. As a kid, we drove to Boston so we could see what was going on in the department store windows. I guess you could still do that at Printemps here in Paris, but not many people do that anymore. I remember wrapping a palm tree with lights. And I remember unwrapping a Lionel train set. And I remember going to a family that had been flooded out on Christmas Eve with an armful of presents bought by all those unemployed people who learned there was a family even worse off than they were. The Christmas story. You know, the trappings don't really matter. There's only one thing that matters about this story. And that is, we have made this winter festival a time to proclaim hope. Long before Jesus Christ was born, our ancestors developed festivals in the dead of winter, like just about now. Festivals to hope and pray that the days would get longer again and the darkness would flee and their crops would bloom and their herds would reproduce. The church toward the end of the Roman Empire took over the festival the Romans celebrated for the unconquered son, Sol Invictus, and not only took up all of those different hopes and fears of people at the time, but much more deeply tell a story about the darkness of our lives that is not going to win. To be able to shout that life is worth living despite everything because it never ends. To be able to proclaim that the lie that is so pervasive, especially it seems today, will never overcome the truth. That the evil that we do, that is done to us, that evil will never prevail over good. And while death will have his one day, we are going to live forever. This is what we need to tell our children. This is what we need to celebrate. We have hope. Always, always, always. Hope through the birth of Christ, for God becoming real among us in the illusions of our lives, to be able to bring us into something different, something new, something that doesn't end. In the prayer book, in the daily office, we conclude one set of prayers where the officiant says, "In you, O Lord, is our hope." And the people answer, "And we will never hope in vain." Never, never, never shall we hope in vain. Always, always, always we have hope with us. That's what I love about this story. So as Episcopalians across Europe are greeting one another, some saying, "Buon Natale," and others saying, "Frohe Weihnachten," and still others, "Feliz Navidad." And in these parts, they say, "Joyeux Noël," and "Merry Christmas."